It's your time to ed up with America's leading higher education podcast network, the Ed Up Experience, where we make education your business. This is Ed Up Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. She's Dean at St. Mary's School of Law, and she's going to be leading conversations about legal education in today's world. Now let's hear from your host, Patty Roberts.
Welcome to Ed Up Legal. This is Patty Roberts, and I am your host here with you from St. Mary's University School of Law in San Antonio, Texas. Today's guest is Aliza Shosman. She is the president and co-founder of the Legal Accountability Project, which is a nonprofit aimed at ensuring that as many law clerks as possible have positive clerkship experiences. It also helps support and extend resources to those who don't have those positive clerkship experiences. So I wonder, Ms. Shosman, if you can tell us initially what prompted you to start this?
Sure. So I came to this work based on my personal experience with gender discrimination, harassment, and retaliation during my clerkship and in the years following it. So I went to WashU Law and graduated in 2019, aspiring to be a homicide prosecutor in DC. I decided to clerk in DC Superior Court during the 2019 to 2020 term because I knew that prosecutors appeared before DC Superior Court judges. And I, like many clerkship applicants, thought that I would get a crash course in trial lawyering, judicial decision-making, and that I would really develop a lifelong mentor-mentee relationship with my judge. Unfortunately, that did not happen. Beginning pretty much just weeks into the clerkship, the judge for whom I clerked would kick me out of the courtroom and tell me I made him uncomfortable, and he just felt more comfortable with my male co-clerk, told me I was aggressive and nasty and a disappointment. The day I found out that I passed the DC bar exam, so big day in my life, he called me into his chambers, got in my face and said, "You're bossy. And I know bossy because my wife is bossy."
Oh dear.
It was just devastating. I mean, it was my first legal job. I was a couple months out of law school and this judge just seemed to be singling me out for mistreatment. I remember crying myself to sleep at night, wanting to be reassigned to a different judge, but my workplace didn't have an employee dispute resolution plan that would have enabled me to be reassigned. So we transitioned to remote work during the pandemic, moved back to Philly to stay with my parents in March of 2020. And the judge basically ignored me for 6 weeks before he called me up and told me he was ending my clerkship early because I made him uncomfortable and lacked respect for him. So I reached out to DC Courts HR and they said there was nothing they could do because DC HR doesn't regulate judges and the judges and law clerks have a unique relationship. And then they asked me whether I knew that I was an at-will employee. So it took me about a year to get back on my feet after that, but I eventually did secure my dream job in the DC U.S. Attorney's Office, moved back to DC, and I was 2 weeks into training in July of 2021 when I received some pretty devastating news. I was told the judge had made negative statements about me during my background investigation, that I wouldn't be able to obtain a security clearance, and that my job offer was being revoked.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yep. And then a couple days later, another interview offer for a different job with the same office was also revoked based on the same negative reference. I was 2 years into my legal career at this point, and the judge just seemed to have enormous power over my life and career. So I filed a judicial complaint with the DC Commission on Judicial Disabilities and Tenure, hired attorneys, and in the summer and fall of 2021, participated in the investigation into the now former judge. We were partway through that investigation when I found out the judge was on leave pending an investigation into other misconduct. At the time, he'd filed a negative reference about me, but the USAO wasn't alerted of that. And I eventually saw the reference through private settlement negotiations, which was outrageous and misleading, but by then the damage had been done and I'm pretty much blackballed from what I thought was my dream job. During the investigation that summer, I became aware of the Judiciary Accountability Act, or the JAA, which is legislation that would extend Title VII to the federal judiciary. Judges and law clerks are currently exempt, meaning that law clerks can't sue their harassers for harm done to their lives, careers, and earning potential. A House Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on that bill happened in March of 2022, and I submitted written testimony for that. I'd spoken with and kept in touch with House and Senate offices involved in J drafting, shared my story, And in the days following my statement, I received a really positive response. So I began throwing around some ideas for ways to further this advocacy work and protect law clerks from having the terrible experience that I had. And then the Legal Accountability Project was eventually born. I launched it on June 1, 2022 with my friend and now co-founder, Matt Goodman, another WashU Law alum. And we're very excited about the positive response so far.
Well, that's really terrific. You've certainly turned lemons into lemonade and identified a need that the Judicial Accountability Act is something that even has to be considered, right? How can it be that the judiciary is not governed by Title VII like the rest of us?
Yeah. And as of 1995, Congress and the executive branch are both subject to Title VII as of two separate laws. And at that time, the judiciary was just vociferously opposed to these regulations, and they have been since then. So it's really just the judiciary that remains exempt from these critical protections.
So back to the judge who is no longer a judge. When you found out there had been other complaints made against him, were they similar in nature?
Some were, yes.
Well, how brave you were to go up and to provide your testimony and to inquire and really to just stand up and dust yourself off after what must have been very devastating to learn that he was providing these false narratives.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's important for law clerks to speak out. And I think that stopping the cycle of abuse starts with sharing our experiences. So it was important to me.
Now, did your co-founder have a similar experience, or does he just share your inspiration and passion for this work because it's the right thing to do?
So he has some personal experience, a little bit different, and he hasn't shared his story as publicly as I have, but his previous experience was working at the National Judicial College, training judges, state court judges on these issues. So he brings a different perspective to this work, but I rely on him for so much. We have complementary skill sets, so. Yeah.
That's great. Now, before we started, you indicated that this was one of several podcast interviews you had this week, and I have seen that you've had others before this week. So you're obviously getting a lot of airtime. People are interested in this topic. What is the reception that you're getting from the various stakeholders? So let's start with judges. What reception are you getting from judges to your advocacy in this nonprofit?
So the response from judges has actually been incredibly positive. At first, I had a lot of judges reaching out to me, and then I started reaching out to them as well, especially ones who are WashU Law or Williams alums. I went to Williams College as well. The response has been very positive from sitting state and federal judges, federal district and appellates. They are supportive of the work I'm doing. They are supportive of an internal database, which I think we'll talk about in a little bit. They are supportive of extending Title VII protections to the judiciary. Sometimes they say things like, I didn't even realize I was exempt from Title VII, or I ascended from the state court bench where we were not exempt from Title VII. Nothing magically changed about me when I received life tenure. So it's been overall very positive. One or two challenging conversations, but I've appreciated support from judges.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. And I echo what some of the judges said. I didn't realize that the Title VII didn't apply to them. I imagine there are many people that you are providing this information to who didn't realize it. And to your point, you know, what changed or nothing changed about me from when I was on the state court bench to being appointed to a lifetime appointment at the federal bench? No, nothing did. And how much more is at stake, right? When we have a lifetime federal appointment. So.
Absolutely. I mean, the power disparities between law clerks and any judge are enormous. And if you are a life tenure judge, the power disparity is even more challenging to go up against. So,
what is the response that you're getting from clerks, prior clerks, those who are currently serving, those who hope to serve? What sorts of feedback are you getting from regarding the nonprofit from them?
So the response has been overwhelmingly and enormously positive from current and former clerks, as well as students. Former clerks and current clerks reach out to me every day to thank me for the work I'm doing, to confide in me, to share their stories, and to ask when the database is going to go live so they can report into it. So it's been very positive. And then I'm speaking to a lot of student leaders because in addition to the database we're creating and the workplace assessment we're doing, we'll also be on a lot of law school campuses. And the response from students has been fabulous. They are engaged and excited on these issues. They know that they are unaddressed and law school resources are insufficient or non-existent. And they're really just excited to bring us to their campuses and engage. I was not expecting such a uniformly positive response from, you know, my peers, and I've just been really heartened by it.
Well, you've obviously struck a nerve and a need, and I'm glad that you're getting very positive reception. It doesn't surprise me that students on campuses are really welcoming to you. How are you finding the other members of law school campus communities, deans, career strategy directors? What sorts of feedback are you getting from them?
Yeah, so I realized we didn't really talk about the two initiatives, so I should probably back up and talk about those and then talk about.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So the Legal Accountability Project is working on two initiatives in collaboration with law schools beginning this fall. The first one is a centralized clerkships reporting database, whereby former clerks and current clerks who are law school alumni will be able to create an account with us and write a report about their clerkship and their judge anonymously. And if your law school is participating, all of your students can read all of the reports, not just alums' reports, but the reports from every other school that's participating. It's a way to centralize and democratize information about judges, because currently there really is no way for clerkship applicants to know to avoid judges with a history of misconduct. Very few law schools conduct any sort of post-clerkship survey. Very few centralize this information in a searchable database. And even the ones that do can see that they are not capturing the scope of the problem, because law clerks who have been mistreated are historically unwilling to report this information back to their law schools. And even for the schools that have an okay response rate, there is a ceiling on the number of judges they can keep track of. And it is totally dependent on who your law clerk alumni decide to clerk for. So that is the clerkships database. And then we're also doing a workplace assessment of the federal and state judiciaries, which it's a climate survey, and it'll finally answer the question, how pervasive is harassment in the judiciary? We're going to elucidate data on the types of clerks facing mistreatment, the availability of resources in state and federal courthouses, and law clerks' concerns about reporting to their law schools and to the judiciary. And we're going to ask that law schools send this link to the past 10 to 20 years worth of law clerk alumni in the fall. And this type of data has never been collected before on a wide scale, and we're very excited about it. So in terms of how law schools are responding to this, I have spoken with more than 50 law schools at this point. Deans of Career Services are enormously supportive. I have been overwhelmed by the positive response from them. They are excited to engage with me, to make changes. We feel very excited about the response from them. Clerkship directors, it's been more challenging. There is one school in the 50-ish I've spoken with where the administration refuses to speak with me, and now the clerkship director is trying to prevent us from visiting in the fall. We will be on that campus and every other campus in the fall talking about these issues, whether we are welcome or not, although in general, we have been quite welcome. My concern about clerkship directors is that the incentive structures are not set up for these initiatives. And what I mean by that is some clerkship directors are really incentivized to funnel as many law students into clerkships as possible. Good, bad, it doesn't matter. It's just about the number of placements. And it's possible that that message comes from higher up and that they will be penalized for potentially not having as many placements that year. I'm not sure. But those conversations have been hard to have clerkships directors say things to me like, I know about misbehaving judges and it's my policy not to warn students. It's a he said, she said, it's not my responsibility. Or, you know, it's not harassment in the clerkship workplace. It's just the young attorney adjusting to her first job. Or we're blessed to only work with good judges. All of our students have a positive experience. These are all refuted by the student leaders at the law schools that I speak with, and we'll be going to all those campuses and others. And I am just concerned that there's a couple clerkship directors who might, you know, hold up change on this issue. So my message to the more recalcitrant administrations is that our clerkships database will bolster everybody's clerkship program. Why? There are large swaths of law student populations, historically marginalized groups, women, minorities, LGBTQ students, who decide not to clerk because they are fearful. They tell me this, professors tell me this every day. that they think it is a hostile work environment, or they don't know if the judge is friendly to LGBTQ individuals or women, and they decide not to clerk. Law schools could capitalize on that enormous segment of the population and get all those people to clerk, and that would bolster your numbers. I'm not dissuading anybody from clerking. I wish I'd had a positive clerkship experience, because I think it would have launched my career as a prosecutor. I just want to make sure every law school and every law student is prioritizing positive experience over prestige of the clerkship.
So there are three things you've indicated support for: the two programs that you just mentioned, the centralized clerkship database, the workplace climate survey. And also you talked about the Judicial Accountability Act and your support for it. So I assume advocacy efforts will continue from your nonprofit as far as the JAA goes.
I mean, definitely in my personal capacity as a former law clerk, the focus of the nonprofit can't be advocacy work, and it won't be. But in my personal capacity, I'll continue to speak out in support of it. And I write about the JAA a lot. So yes, it's enormously important legislation. And law clerks just can't wait another year for such urgently needed reforms.
So the centralized clerkship database, are you emulating this after anything that exists now? Some sort of national employer database providing feedback about those experiences in the legal field?
Yeah, so this is based on the internal databases that some law schools maintain with improved questioning and questions that really elucidate information about misconduct and mistreatment, as well as other things students would need to know before applying for a clerkship. Does the judge give me writing experience, courtroom experience? How do they provide feedback on work? Do they let me take vacation days? So it's based on the systems that some law schools have with improved questioning. And we've decided to centralize it rather than create an individual database at each law school, because we want to tackle the problematic silo effects, whereby some law schools do have some information about misbehaving judges. They may or may not share that with students, but that really does nothing if a few law schools are hoarding the information to protect the hundreds of other law schools, clerkship applicants who are potentially unwittingly walking into a hostile work environment. But I think part of the reason judges have been supporting our initiatives, including the database, is because they know that some law schools already maintain them. And they suspect there might be negative reports in there. And when I speak with clerkship directors, I know that there are some. So yeah, it's based off existing systems, but it's improved and centralized.
Is there another sector outside of law that has done this kind of centralized database, capitalizing on what the graduate schools are already, or employment agencies are already finding and keeping track of in their internal systems?
That's a good question. I'm not aware of any. We've already received outreach from young doctors and med students asking us to create a similar system for them. So it makes me think.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Another hierarchical profession. That one, those folks are protected by Title VII, so it's a little bit better. But yes, another profession with enormous power disparities.
The internal system that they would then, my law school might choose to share any internal system we had, or to revise it with your questions. And then if we wanted to be a part of it, then our students could have access to all of the respondents from all the schools that were participants. What if a law school wants to participate by utilizing your database tools and your questionnaire, but doesn't want other schools to see their students' responses?
So they can't do that. By participating, your alums report into it, your students see all the responses. Yes.
All right.
And right now, I mean, we see it as supplementing law school's existing resources. If you have some sort of internal database and you keep track of things like students' GPAs and compare them to like what the judge's hiring preferences, we'll supplement existing resources for now. 5 years down the road, we hope that we will supplant everyone's resources and that this will be the go-to source for information about judges prior to applying for clerkships. But some other important aspects of the database are that deans and administrators, law students, and young alums, former clerks, are the ones who can look at the database. It's not publicly accessible. Judges won't be reading it. Reporters won't be reading it. alumni will be reporting anonymously, so it can't be traced back to them what has been said. But law school officials will be able to receive reports of what their law clerk alumni have said, not identifying who they are, but saying, you received 10 reports of mistreatment in this circuit, that sort of thing.
Well, that's interesting. That answers another question. So you will allow these to be anonymous submissions. Will there be a mechanism to ensure the legitimacy or the accuracy of the submissions?
So I like this question. So yes, we will, first of all, we expect that most law clerks will report anonymously. We have an optional last page where they can give their name as a way to provide the information to other students considering this clerkship, but we assume most folks will report anonymously. And what this does is it lessens fears of retaliation and reputational harm, which are historically one of the most important reasons why law clerks are not reporting to their law schools, let alone filing formal complaints. To your question about the veracity of the reports, we do not have a culture of false allegations against judges. We have a culture of gross underreporting and fear of retaliation and reputational harm. I'm not at all concerned about false allegations against judges. I think that law clerks will gather the courage to finally report truthfully on their negative clerkship experiences because it's anonymous, because it's centralized and taken out of their law school's hands. And also importantly, because they trust me, because I'm out there every day sharing my personal story of mistreatment, speaking out on these issues. And I will be at a lot of law school campuses sharing my story. Any law school that agrees to partner with us, I've committed to doing an in-person visit to talk about our resources. And we will be able to say, Aliza was just on your campus sharing her story, talking about a culture of reporting. We hope you'll utilize the database and fill out the workplace assessment to finally quantify the scope of the problem, protect the next generation of law clerks from mistreatment.
Well, I appreciate your response to the question, and I have no reason to doubt you that the veracity will be consistent and that will be the majority of things that are submitted. But I'm trying to play devil's advocate, and I want to ask, when you said we don't have a culture of overreporting, we have a culture of underreporting, totally believe that, but is there any data that supports that?
That's a good question. So when we look at any sort of public website, and we're definitely not comparing ourselves to a Yelp or a Roving Room, though people have made those comparisons. That's not what we're doing. It's not a public database, but there is a baseline of negative reports. So when you ask about data, we don't have data on this specific issue yet. Our Legal Accountability Project workplace assessment will be the first data on these issues, and we're excited about that. We do think there is a baseline of negative reports that one can expect to receive. So it's possible that if we receive one negative report about a judge, it stays in there, but it's probably not a red flag. If we receive 10 or 50, and we're going to be using a red flag, green flag system once we've received enough reports, that should trigger more concern among law clerk applicants.
And are you employing or partnering with professionals who are used to designing surveys like this to elicit the most informative data that can be then maybe statistically analyzed and collected empirically?
Yes, it's already been reviewed by several experts. So yes, we are working with those individuals. And we've now sent our resources to approximately 40 law schools for their review and feedback. We really agonized over every word in these resources and was reviewed by a lot of people. We appreciate everybody willing to assist and pitch in. I think a lot of stakeholders think that this is important data that needs to be collected.
Terrific. Now, as far as your workplace climate survey goes, what plans do you have to ensure that that it's completed, that that there are responses from a diversity and very comprehensive group of federal and state judicial chambers? Tell us a little bit about the process you're undergoing for that climate survey.
Absolutely. So the clerkships database is going to be a subscription model. We are going to ask law schools to pay a reasonable fee. So we understand that that will make some people less willing to participate. The climate assessment is free. All we ask is that law schools send our survey link to the past 10 to 20 years of law clerk alumni to the extent they maintain this information. If all 40 schools who I've sent the resources to agree to send this link out, it will be an enormous data set, enormously geographically diverse and representative. So we really just need law schools to send out this survey. If they don't, they are hindering data collection and analysis efforts. And since the federal judiciary has been notoriously unwilling to conduct this type of climate assessment on a wide scale, and state judiciaries, I don't think they really have the resources to do this, this is an enormously important initiative.
So this survey will not be of the people working in the workplaces at this point. It's prior clerks that you'll seek out.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, this is very exciting, and I look forward to seeing the traction that you're able to get with law schools regarding this database participation in the climate survey and to seeing the difference it makes. And I hope we'll see also the passage of the Judicial Accountability Act, at least as it relates to Title VII protections for employees. Before we conclude, I always ask those who are on the podcast what they see as the evolution of legal education in the coming decade. And you're welcome to answer it broadly, as many people have, or you can answer it specifically as to the work that you're doing and hoping to evolve judicial clerkship hiring.
Yeah, I'll say two things. The first is that this year, we hope that 10 law schools will partner with us on the database. We hope more will partner with us on the workplace assessment because it's free. Eventually, 5 to 10 years down the road, we hope that all 100 plus law schools will participate in the database and that this will supplant rather than supplement existing resources. This will transform the clerkship landscape if all law schools participate. It will really ensure that law students can pursue careers they love in workplaces that are free from discrimination and harassment. And it will bolster, like I said, every school's clerkship program. I think on a more broad scale, I hope that the future of legal education is more responsive to student needs. As I've said, we've really received an enormously positive response from students who are excited to bring me to their campus and talk about these issues, despite some challenging clerkships directors. And I really hope that some of these administrations who are more recalcitrant and not ready to make changes become more responsive to student needs, because the next generation of students is going to be demanding change, demanding safe workplaces, demanding resources, and law schools should be responding to that.
Well, and to some degree, we have a responsibility to do so, right? We can't be sending our students out to unsafe or hostile work environments, no matter who is the employer. So I thank you for sharing with us information about the Legal Accountability Project. I congratulate you on the start of the nonprofit, you and your co-founder. And I'm sorry that you had this experience where, you know, someone with a tremendous amount of power over you not only made your employment very distressing and unpleasant, but perhaps even worse than that, followed you through other opportunities and prevented those for you. So I'm sorry that it happened, but I'm glad that something really good has come out of it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Appreciate you being a guest, and we'll keep tabs on how you're doing and see what progress you make in the coming year. Thank you.
This has been another episode of EdUp Legal with your host, Patty Roberts. EdUp Legal is part of the EdUp Experience podcast network, bringing you the brightest and most influential minds across higher education and beyond. Here at EdUp, we make education your business.